Halashing for Halas? Want to bri or fine dine? Stay tuned to High FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
Good morning and welcome to the Essen Fressen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, and I've been digging deep into some of the wonderful books that we have and some of the oldest books. I mean, I found a book from 1977. What an amazing book, where certain things don't change. I mean, certain traditional things don't change. In fact, what made me do this program was I was on a webinar with the Cape Literary Association, I think they're called. And one of the questions was, do you follow trends or do you just cook traditional food? And I think it's a combination of both. I think obviously we want to keep up with the trends. We want to go the sushi route. We want to do pot of sourdough bread. We want to, do all the modern things, but still keep in with our tradition. So, of course, I went on to a few sites, I read a few books, and I was just thinking that the Jewish cooking is just so much more than that. You know, people say to you, okay, I can't wait to try Jewish food. What is Jewish food? You know, and of course, as I said before, that is a whole different program on its own. But today I just want to talk about lovely traditional food. The warmth of Rosh Hashanah is coming up. Now, of course, it was, are we going to cook for 2, 4, or 6? I've actually done a set of recipes, a section in Jewish life this month for Rosh Hashanah. And, you know, obviously there are a couple of twists here and there, but now that we're allowed to, I think we're allowed to have a few more people now that we're on stage 2, although I'm still petrified, so I'm sticking to my 4, max 6 people. But I was actually looking through and seeing all the beautiful traditional Jewish food that's out there. So when people say, I'm dying to taste Jewish food, we're talking about traditional food, and Jewish cooking is so much more than chopped liver and latkes. And I watched a program on TV the other day where, I think it was Diners, Drivers and Dives, I don't know which program it was, and they made a latke, thin, beautiful, crispy latke, just how I like it. Slightly soft in the middle, but obviously very thin. And they piled it high with about 300 grams of pastrami, I think it was, or it could have even been just pickled beef, and topped it with another latke. So there's a little twist on just latke and pickled beef. But ours is a very rich heritage, rich as in latkes. It's a very rich heritage of people scattered across the globe to find way in vastly different cultures to bring in that traditional, still bring in that traditional feel. And I thought to myself, I wonder what Chaim in Scotland is going to be having for Rosh Hashanah, and somebody in Ireland is going to be having, and somebody in Russia, and a little later, hopefully if we have time, I'm going to be speaking to somebody that I met over the internet, and she owns runs the bagel shop in Vilna. So she's going to be talking about the kinds of foods that they're going to be having for Rosh Hashanah. So, you know, we can say that whether we settled in Eastern Europe, whether we settled in North Africa, Asia or Spain, Jews have influenced the cooking of other peoples and adapted their ways to the food of their new lands as well. So there is perhaps no other cuisine that embraces so many tastes and cooking styles, which is so true. I mean, who would have thought of smoked steak sushi cake? And that was, I think I did that about 10, 12 years ago. But let's get on to some lovely traditional foods and some anecdotes after the break.
Chalashing for Chalas? Want to braai or fine dine? Stay tuned to Chai FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bagatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
Welcome back to the Essen Fressen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, and thank you for joining me today. So we were talking about traditional food, something that I feel is very important, and of course, twists on traditional food, twists on chopped liver and things like that. But I said to my husband, if you had to choose a lovely soup for Rosh Hashanah, because he won't eat chicken soup, what will it be? And he said, definitely Krupnik soup. So I looked around, I thought, now I really want to find something like a real hearty Krupnik soup. Because I remember in the old days, we used to be able to get that, I think it was Telma or some, or one of them, used to do that barley Krupnik soup, but don't do it anymore. But this is something that we can make on Friday and possibly and eat on Shabbos. So, little story I have to tell you before. A Jewish man was once stuck in a small village late one Friday and was unable to get home before Shabbat. So there was one other Jew living there. So the traveler asked him how much it would be to spend Shabbat at his house. 10 rubles, said the man. That's an awful lot, the visitor grumbled. Can't you reduce the price? No way, said he. That's the price. Take it or leave it. As he had no alternative, the traveler agreed and spent the whole Shabbat there. The finest dishes were served at the meals and he ate and drank to his heart's content. On Saturday evening, he took out his pocketbook and wanted to pay. God forbid, said his host. What kind of man do you think I am? To take money from a Jew who spends Shabbat in my home? Then why did you insist on me paying at such a high price? He wondered. Simple, replied the village Jew. I wanted you to eat and drink as much as you like a rich man who has paid a fortune for his meal. And isn't that all of us? We just want to embrace people and have people over and feed them and give them beautiful food and traditional food. And I just thought, you know, that's a good one. Mushroom and barley soup, a Krupnik soup really goes a long way. So what you'll need for this soup is half a cup of dried lean beans. White beans are good, cannellini beans. Half a cup of dried mushrooms. If you can't get dried mushrooms, don't worry, just use a cup of regular mushrooms. A cup and a half. Because, you know, mushrooms really shrink down to nothing. So I would use about 250 grams of mushrooms. You'd need 500 grams of soup meat with bones. 2 liters of water. You can use a little bit of oil because we're going to, or chicken fat. Let's really be traditional. Get some schmaltz and we're going to fry a large onion chopped up. And then what you'll also need is a cup of barley, a carrot peeled and sliced or grated on the large side, salt and pepper to taste. Now, the night before you the night before you're actually going to make the soup, you need to soak the beans in water, covered, and the next day drain the beans and set them aside. You're going to soak the mushrooms in water to cover for about an hour. If you're not soaking them and you're just going to have fresh mushrooms or the tinned mushrooms, you don't need to soak them. Meanwhile, you place the meat and the bones in a large pot, soup pot, and fry it a little, because there's nothing nicer than that beautiful caramelized taste that you're going to add, that will be added to the soup. And then you're going to add the water and bring it to a boil. Now, what you're going to do is you're going to remove the foam from the surface. You know, you get floaters, as my kids call them. It's all bubbly and floaty on top. Okay, remove that. Or what you can do is you can just cool it and you can remove the fat and all those gray sort of bubbles on top. And then you add the dry beans, you reduce the heat, and you simmer covered for an hour. And then in a small little skillet, well, a small little frying pan, you melt the chicken fat or the oil, and you brown the onions to a sort of nice caramel color. Then you place the mushrooms with the barley and the carrots. Add some salt and pepper to taste. Make sure that everything's nicely covered, because remember, your barley's going to absorb some water, the beans absorb water, etc. And you let it boil for about 1 to 2 hours. Now, what I did and what you can do is use your crock pot. Once you've taken off all the, drained off all the muck, no, that's a horrible word. The whatever risen to the top from the bones cooking, take that all off, and then you can put everything into your cholent pot, and you can just let it cook from that night to the following day for lunch, and it's delicious for lunch. So that is lovely Krupnik soup.
Chalashin for chalas. Want to braai or fine dine? Stay tuned to Chai FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
So, of course, looking for recipes from all over the world and what people are going to eat for Rosh Hashanah or Shabbos, I spoke to an Italian friend of mine who said, Sharon, you must include, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, stracquata di manzo, okay, which is basically braised beef in red wine. She said, this is, stracquata means overcooked, so I suppose it would be like apple beef. And although one shouldn't take this too literally, long cooking is nonetheless necessary to make a tough and inexpensive cut of meat tender. Okay, so now other recipes for braised beef. Cut the meat into cubes instead of keeping it as one piece. I mean, if it's going to break up anyway, I suppose you could cut it into cubes, although I prefer to use a brisket or something for this. And it's basically, it's just a delicious, delicious stew. Or you know what? I'd say it's more like a tzimmus. Okay, let's call it a tzimmus. I agree. I prefer the wine and spice version, and I think it results in a more interesting flavor. So not every cook browns the meat first, so you can skip that step, which she does if you like. I don't. I like to brown my meat first. I think caramelizes it and just makes it extra delicious. So what you will need is 3 tablespoons of olive oil, about 1 kilo, because now remember, I don't know how many people we're cooking for this year on trip. 1 minute we're in lockdown, the next minute, okay, we level 2, the next minute, but I'm just very nervous, so I'm keeping it really small. So what I did was you need to get 1 kilo of stewing beef. Now, you can cut it into cubes. You can have it on the bone. You can get a rolled piece of top rib, let's say, and you can slice it up. You can get a piece of brisket if you want. And then you'll need two large onions diced, three carrots peeled and chopped, or you can grate them, or you can cut them into discs, in little round discs. Two celery stalks, chopped. 4 cups of peeled, seeded and chopped tomatoes. Fresh or canned. 3 or 4, so that would be about, I would say about three tins of tomato, canned tomatoes. I would use canned tomatoes because you're going to cook it for hours anyway. But if you are going to use fresh tomatoes, use fresh jam tomatoes and make sure that they are really red because they cook down beautifully. You'll also need about 3 or 4 garlic cloves, cut into slivers, or you can just, I suppose, crush it in. I put a little bit more garlic in because we love garlic. 1 lemon zest strip, so that's about 6 centimeters long. So what's that, about a, just a little bit more than a tablespoon. 1 cinnamon stick. A few whole cloves. If you like cloves, you know, it's like, reminds you of going to the dentist, those cloves, yes. You can use a few whole cloves. 3 to 4 cups of dry red wine. Or you may need a little bit more, or maybe a little bit less. Start with a bottle. Salt and freshly ground pepper to taste. Now, you warm the olive oil in a large pan over high heat, and you brown the roast, or you brown the meat cubes in batches, and brown well on all sides. Transfer it to a heavy pot, or at that stage, I suppose you could transfer it to your cholin pot, or crock pot, as some like to call it, and then you add the onions, the carrots, the celery, the tomatoes, the garlic, the lemon zest, the cinnamon stick, and the cloves, if you're using it. Pour in the wine to cover. Bring to a boil over medium to high heat. Cover it, reduce the heat to low, and simmer until the meat is stracotta, which means overcooked, or very tender, and the pan juices are well thickened. Okay, now we remove the cinnamon stick, lemon zest, and cloves if you use them, and you just discard them. Season the beef with salt and pepper and transfer it to a warm, beautiful serving dish that you use for roast meat. Slice it up. Now, if you want to, as we like to do, I think this is more along the Sephardic lines, but you can add prunes if you want. Add some prunes, add some potatoes. I mean, really make it a lovely full meal. So you can saute the onions, carrots and celery in the olive oil until tender before adding them to the pot. But if you, that, oh, that full of flavor, use all these wonderful ingredients. And if there isn't enough liquid, remember you must cook the liquid on the stove first with the onions and this and it, all the other ingredients, and then you can add it to the cholin pot or crock pot, whatever you call it, and use and pour the meat over. You may need to add a little bit more liquid. You know what I would add? A little bit of chicken stock, a little bit of vegetable stock to it, and it's as easy as that. It's just a wonderful braised beef in red. It's actually amazing, the warm memories associated with Shabbat and all the Yom Tovim. And it's almost like, how can I put that? They're like bathed in the tantalizing aromas and tastes of the special foods, foods which mark each Yom Tov. I mean, I think our grandmothers were very wise, in that they didn't allow certain dishes to become commonplace by using it frequently, using that particular dish frequently, that we longed for chicken soup and knedlach on Pesach or pierogen and things like that. And that's what I try to do. I don't serve the same thing every week. The kids must say, you know, oh, you know what I'm craving for. And I think that's what makes traditional foods so beautiful and traditional. And I mean, when you think about it, each holiday like has its own special smell. For me, Pesach has a cinnamon smell. For me, Rosh Hashanah has a honey smell, an apple smell. I don't know what it is. Chanukah has a latke smell. Yeah, a fried oily smell. And it's just interesting to see how everybody in the end somehow has the same sort of things. We all have tzimmes, or for those that are vegetarian, can have carrot, tzimmes and prunes. We all have traditional, somewhere along the line, there's a traditional speciality on Yom Tov. So, I'm going to share another recipe with you.
Chalashing for chalas? Want to braai or fine dine? Stay tuned to Chai FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
So, what is Rosh Hashanah without some wonderful, sweet things? And I was actually had to do a recipe for one of the magazines overseas and here, and it was a honey cake. But what I did was, instead of the honey cake, I made little muffins, and I served that with chalva and tahina ice cream, which is quite easy to make, because all you do is just buy the vanilla ice cream and then let it soften a bit and add some chalva and a little bit of tahini paste. But the honey cake is something that's very traditional and quite delicious. So I have to share this with you, but before I share it, I have to tell you a little story. A woman once went with some friends, and she went to visit some friends, and the host served them with a lekach, which is honey cake. And her friends sat and they chatted and eating the cake all the time. And finally, one of the guests got up to go and said to her hostess, "Your lekach is really excellent. Imagine, I ate 3 slices." "You ate 5, she answered. "But who's counting?" Isn't that? Now, we say, "I'm just neatening off the edges, and by the time I'm finished, I could have had 2 slices of cake." Anyway, so let me give you this lovely recipe, and maybe you can eat 5 slices of it. You'll need 4 eggs, 1 cup of brown sugar. Now, I really do like the brown sugar, because it just gives it that richer, more caramelized sort of taste. 3 tablespoons of melted margarine, or you can use melted coconut oil. 1 cup of honey. 1 cup of strong coffee. Yeah, we have to just take the hint of all the sweetness away. A little bit of coffee. 3 cups of sifted flour, just the regular flour, cake flour. 1.5 teaspoons of baking powder, and 1 teaspoon of baking soda. 1 cup of chopped walnuts or almonds. That's optional if you feel like chopped walnuts or almonds in it. But I must say that the walnuts gave it a wonderful taste. 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/2 a teaspoon of ground ginger, and 1/2 a teaspoon of allspice. So what we do, first of all, you must preheat your oven to 180 or 350, and you beat the eggs with the sugar and the margarine or the coconut oil. Then you combine the honey and coffee and slowly add it to the egg sugar mixture. Remember that the coffee allow to get a little bit cold. You sift the flour with the baking powder and the baking soda and blend it into the egg mixture as well. And then you can add the nuts if you want the nuts and the spices. The spices being the cinnamon, ginger, and allspice. And then you line, I would say one of those, you can line the tin foil or one, quite a large oven-proof dish. I would say about 20 by 25 centimeters. And you place a little bit of paper underneath, not wax paper or brown paper, just the regular baking paper. Just cut a piece in, and then you bake it for about an hour. Okay, and then you just turn the cake upside down on a wire rack, and then you peel off the paper. Okay, and that makes one cake. If you want to, you can add a little bit of zest of lemon to it as well, which takes away just a little bit of sweetness. I would say about half a teaspoon of finely grated zest of lemon. And there's all sorts of options that you can add to it, but definitely use one full cup of a lovely honey. Not too cheap, because they tend to be a bit syrupy. So you want a lovely, rich honey. Now, also, one other thing before I forget, I found that 350, 180 was a little high when I made the honey cake. I think it's also because of the honey and the brown sugar, etc. So I turned it down to 170 and I left it in for an hour, and then switched off the oven, left it in for 10 minutes, and it was perfect. So I was reading the Jewish Report, and I saw an advert for, I think Kosher World had an ad on, and they had tinned sauerkraut made by Eden. And I think it's got a couple of vegetables in it as well. But it just reminded me of a wonderful recipe that I used to make, and it just makes it so much easier. It's just layers of corned beef, as they call it in America. We call it pickled beef, but I would get the cooked one. So you get order from your butcher cooked pickled beef, and then you can slice it up, or you can ask him to slice it up. You probably need about a kilo. And ask him to cut it slightly thicker. And you do layers of, you take the sauerkraut and you mix it with a little bit of sugar. I would say about a quarter of a cup of sugar, because just remember it's Rosh Hashanah and we want it to be sweet. But it is a beautiful traditional dish. So you can have you put a layer of sauerkraut, layer of corned beef or pickled beef, cooked already, as I said, another layer of sauerkraut, and obviously mixed with the sugar or with honey or with syrup, just to make it a little sweet. And you'll see if you prefer it a little sweeter, not so sweet, and just do layers of that and stick it in your chollen pot and cook it for about, remember it is cooked already because you've asked for a cooked pickled brisket or pickled hump or pickled meat. And I would leave it just to cook through for about an hour or 2 hours on high. Or if you want to stick it in the oven, I would stick it in covered, 180, until it warms all the way through. And it's just a quick and easy dish for you to do. I mean, you could also take that tin of sauerkraut. You could add a small tin of the grated pickled beetroot. And then add to that two chopped onions, or you could cut the onion in half and then into thin rings, moon-shaped rings, and then you can add a little bit of salt and pepper and sugar to your tasting, and then just drizzle a little bit of olive oil on top. It's also delicious. It's like a nice red cabbage salad. Okay, so it's all very well having all these lovely meat dishes, but I actually made a wonderful rice dish the other day, and it's called, apparently, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but apparently my Italian friend said it's called riso giallo. I don't know, maybe I'm not pronouncing it properly, but basically it's saffron rice is a traditional Friday night dish, with chicken or your beef or whatever. And Italian Jews can claim to be the oldest permanently settled community in the diaspora. There have been Jews in Rome since Roman times, consequently, and they have their own special traditions and customs. And are neither Sephardic nor Ashkenazic, though both Ashkenazic and Sephardic Jews have established communities in Italy. So this was the recipe that she gave me because she tried my rice and she said, this is so similar. Only thing is I didn't put saffron strands in it, but this is how it goes. You need about 6 tablespoons of olive oil, 2 cups of long grain rice, 3 cups of hot chicken stock. There's your secret, hot chicken stock. 1 teaspoon saffron strands, we've got saffron, 1/2 teaspoon of salt and 1/2 teaspoon of black pepper. And you heat the oil in a large saucepan over high heat. You add the rice and you cook it, stirring constantly with a wooden spoon to coat each grain until the rice starts to pop and leap in the pan. I don't know if you've ever made that salad, that rice salad, like pops like rice. But anyway, something similar to that. And you add 2 cups of the broth, you cover the pan, and you cook that for 7 minutes, or until the broth has been absorbed. So if you have the saffron strands, you need about a teaspoon of saffron strands, then you can add it just to the remaining broth. And then when the broth has been absorbed, add the saffron colored broth. Okay, now if you, because remember you added 2 cups, so this will be in your 3rd cup. If you don't have saffron, I used a little bit of paprika and a little bit of turmeric and it gave it a lovely color. And then you reduce the heat and you cook it covered until the liquid has been absorbed. Stir well and season to taste. Remove rice from the heat. And spread it on a serving platter, put it around a roast, or you can serve it on its own. I actually served mine with chicken. But what you can do is, and it went on so well, was in a separate frying pan, I fried up some finely chopped red, green, and yellow peppers, finely chopped onions, spring onions, mushrooms, garlic, and I added all that to the rice afterwards, after all the, the water had evaporated, and it was delicious. Reminded me of the Nando's rice. Anyway, so that's a nice dish to have. You can just stick it in the warmer, and you've got that for Rosh Hashanah. So now we're going to go on to something sweet, as I said.
Chalashing for chalas? Want to bry or fine dine? Stay tuned to Chai FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
So as promised, I'm going to share a couple of easy but nice sweet desserts, something that you can serve on both nights, you serve during the day, quite easy to make, and almost like the one that I'm going to give you is almost like a berry souffle, and it originated from Hungary, actually. So this recipe can also be prepared not only with strawberries, but with raspberries, loganberries, I don't know, blueberries, blackberries. You can get some frozen ones if you prefer. But you put all the berries into a blender or put them in a jug and hand blend them. You separate 6 eggs. So you need, you need about a half a kilo, 500 grams of either very ripe strawberries, frozen berries, and then you preheat, then you need six eggs separated, 1 1/4 cups of sugar plus extra for coating the dish, and 4 tablespoons of tea biscuits. You know, those, I'm not sure if those lotus biscuits are paro, but you just need about 4 tablespoons of crushed, really finely crushed crumbs. So what you do is you preheat your oven to 325, so it's about 170, and you get a lovely souffle dish, and you wash it out with water, and then you sprinkle that with a little bit of sugar. So rinse it out, and then, you know, the little bit of, don't dry it, and the water that's left over, you just sprinkle the sugar over the dish, and it should hold the sugar. And then you puree all the berries, whether it's strawberries, you can mix them all together in a blender or food processor, as I said. And you beat the egg yolks with the sugar. So that's your 1 1/4 cups sugar. And you beat the egg yolks with the sugar until the mixture is pale yellow, like a creamy color. And then you combine the egg yolk mixture with the pureed strawberries. And you then separately you beat the egg whites until they form a stiff peak, and you fold them into the strawberry mixture together with the crumbs, the biscuit crumbs, and you pour the mixture into a prepared dish. You don't want it to be too big, just so that it fits nicely. And you place it in a larger pan filled with hot water. Okay. Like a bain-marie, I would imagine. Okay, so then you bake that for 30 minutes or until the souffle is well risen. And it will have a thin cooked crust, but be fairly liquid in the center while it's still hot. Okay, it does stiffen up as it cools. So then you let it cool. And you can serve it. You can unmold it if you want to, but you can serve it with some nice cream or, I haven't frozen it, but some people say that you can freeze it, and it's almost like a sorbet ice cream. So there's something different to try and taste. Of course, there's always the good old compote, as my brothers call it, compost. And that's easy enough to make, and everybody's got their own sort of recipe. But I think I do remember that my granny used to do, when she used to make it, she used to take all the dried fruit, you buy, what, a kilo of the safari dried fruit, and the prunes, she used to take out the pips, which was a business, and she always used to put an almond in the middle. So that's quite different. Different taste, although people may still think they're eating the pip with the almond in the middle. And then, of course, one of my favorites is baked apples. Now, I like to peel mine. A lot of people don't because they wanted to keep its original apple sort of, you know, skin on so it looks like an apple. I peel mine, I core mine. So I put that into a dish, and they must sit closely to one another. So depending on how many people you're having, which seems to be going up and down all the time, you put the apples in very close together. And then what I do is I take about a tablespoon to half a liter of orange juice and 1 tablespoon of custard, and I mix it together. And then the best part is stuffing the apples with raisins, and I sometimes put cut up glacé cherries in, and I sometimes put in some pineapple, and you know, whatever you have a mouth for. And then I sort of douse it, put a little bit of cinnamon on top, cover them, and bake them until they're soft. Now, they're also very nice to have because sometimes they break up and then the next day you can have them for breakfast with yogurt. That's delicious. So it seems like I am running out of time here and I was hoping to squeeze in another recipe. Let me find out from the big bosses if I can. Okay, so I have a few more minutes just to quickly share something that I saw some time back, and it really does work. It's tortilla kichel. So what I did was I went into Friends. I like their laffa, and you roll them out as soon as they can go. You can still roll them out even though they, you know, baked already. And I put quite a bit of oil on top with beaten egg. So I beat the egg very well and put it depends on how many you want to make. But during this time, it's just so much easier instead of standing and baking and rolling. And though I suppose we do have time if we're at home, but making kichel, it's a hell of a job. So this one seems so much easier. So you take the laffa and you roll it out, put the well-beaten egg and some oil on top, and you sprinkle lashings of sugar on. I really put quite a lot of sugar on because the underneath is obviously quite savory, the laffa. And put it onto a baking tray which had baking paper underneath because the sugar melts and sort of goes all over the baking tray. So to keep it nice and clean and easier to remove, put baking paper down on the baking sheet, and then I cut it into about 12. You can cut it into more, depends on how big the laffa is, 12 to 16 pieces. And as I said, just stick it in the oven. I put it in on 120, which is quite low, and I let it bake for about an hour-ish until it got really nice and crispy. And then I remove them, and then they do go a little harder. If you want to experiment, you can get an old wire rack. I've got a lovely one from my late Boba. And I actually put them onto there, so it gives them that little crisscross effect as well. But it's a cheat kichel, and there's nothing wrong with it. You put some herring or chopped herring on top or some liver, and Bob's your auntie. Easy as that. So I think it's at the end of my show now. I've just had a look at the time. I hope I haven't run over time. And I just wanted to thank you for joining me, and hopefully in 2 weeks' time, I'll have another show all about Rosh Hashanah again. I'll be speaking to a wonderful guest from Lithuania because we didn't have a chance to do that today. And remember, it's the eaten meat that makes this show complete. And have a wonderful weekend and a wonderful week ahead.